to talk about the Good Shepherd.
It's good to see everyone out. We've got a couple of visitors, and we're going to continue in our thought of the Good Shepherd tonight. So we're going to be looking at it a little differently than we did this morning in John chapter 10. But I hope you're still there in Ezekiel 34 from the passage that Eddie just read for us. In Ezekiel 34, you have what happens when there are bad shepherds. When there are not good leaders, this is what happens. They take advantage of the people. They run the people away. And they don't do their job of when they are bruised and sick and needing help. As we saw God this morning, He picks them up and He carries them in His arms, those who need, and He bandages them up. They do the opposite. They just let them die. Because they don't care for the sheep. And what you have is that is leadership that doesn't care one bit or the other. And so, does God speak highly of them? No. You have the statement there in 34:2, woe to the shepherds of Israel. We noted this morning that there were many shepherds that would have come in. There's the idea of one shepherd that would be Jesus. I'm the good shepherd. But there are many shepherds. There are many leaders. And they would be different kings. They would be different religious leaders, whatever the case. And there are plenty of passages in the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, talking about the shepherds of Israel not doing their job. They have not been serving the sheep, but serving themselves. That's a scary thing when you think about that. So we really want to talk about that tonight, especially in the context of John chapter 10. Go there to John chapter 10. This morning I painted the picture of showing the relationship between the good shepherd and his sheep. And we talked about the security that is there, and the safety that is there, and the special relationship that it is. Partly what makes that so special and so great is the contrast of the leaders of the day. And what I think you have in John chapter 10 is you actually have a rebuke of the Jewish leaders. And he's saying, this is how you should be as shepherds of Israel. And then we're going to look at making a couple applications about being leaders, spiritual leaders specifically, in that. But let me try to make my point of, you see that this is a rebuke of these leaders. Go there to John chapter 10 and notice the first two words of John chapter 10. Truly, truly, mine says, or yours might say, verily, verily. Oh, you got no battery. Man, I was hearing a buzz over here, but I couldn't figure out what was going on. I got no battery. I don't stand by a microphone, so. Is that what's buzzing? Truly, truly is not the way you start a conversation, is it? Oftentimes it's the way you continue. It's being built upon something. So let's back up and let's see what has happened in John chapter 9. You remember in John chapter 9, Jesus has just healed the blind man who was born blind from birth. And so He heals them. And the rulers of the people, they hear about it, and they call Him in before them. And He says, hey, this guy by the name of Jesus healed me. He made me see. And they have a problem with that, don't they? They have a problem because this guy, Jesus, they have made some proclamations about. And so they don't really believe the man until they call in his parents. And they call in his parents, and they won't stand up for the son. But notice a division that is among these rulers and these leaders. In verse 15, the Pharisees were asking him how he received his sight. He said to him, he applied clay to my eyes and I washed and I saw. Therefore, some of the Pharisees are saying, this man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath. This miracle happened on the Sabbath. He said he can't be from God because he did this on the Sabbath. But some of them were saying, how can a man who is a sinner perform signs? They can't rationalize what in the world is going on in their life. Why is Jesus doing this? How is he able to do it? Some say he's a demon. Some say he is this special prophet. Man, what? What? Phone? Maybe it was my phone, my clock, because the clock in the back is, hey, it's working right now. 6:20. And you would think I've never preached before with what's going on right now. This is wild, eh? Nevertheless, there's a division among them. They call him the parent, so let's gather it in. So they see, some of them believe, but remember we talked a couple weeks ago, they wouldn't confess. And part of the reason they wouldn't confess is because of proclamation that had been made by these same Jews. He calls to the parents, and the parents say, hey, you ask him. He's of age, you ask him. And notice why they say that, verse 22. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews. For the Jews had already agreed that if anyone confessed him to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. For this reason, they said, he's of age, ask him. Before Jesus ever performs this miracle, it's already been said, if you confess Jesus as the Christ, you can go ahead and forget your Judaism, get on out of here. You are not welcome here anymore. That was a big deal. They did not want Jesus in any way. Well, they call in the man again the second time, right? And it just goes on and on and on. And then Jesus finally talks with the man again himself. And he says, do you believe in the Son of Man? He says, who is he? The one who's speaking to you. I'm he. He says, Lord, I believe. And so he goes down and Jesus says this to him in verse 39. Jesus said, for judgment I came into the world, so that those who do not see may see, and that those who may see may become blind. And he's not talking about just healing those who are physically blind. But he's talking about opening the eyes of people to spiritual things, whose eyes are blinded to it. And to blind the eyes of those who, I'm going to put it in quotations, see. And then those of the Pharisees who were with him heard these things. And they said to him, we are not blind to Jesus said, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But since you say, we see, your sin remains. What you have is you have a group of people who would not admit that they were blind. They think they can see. They think that they're leading. And for Jesus, hey, we don't know if God spoke to him. We see all these miracles, but we know that he spoke to Moses. Problem was they could see the miracles that Jesus did and should have been a testimony that God had spoken through him. But yet they refused to believe. And it is on the heels of, we're not blind, who are we, that Jesus says, truly, truly, I say to you, chapter 10, verse 1, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep but climbs up some other way, he's a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he puts forth all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. And a stranger they simply will not follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus spoke to them, but they did not understand those things which he was saying to them. Jesus often spoke in parables, didn't he? To get his spiritual point across. They didn't get it. They are blind. They don't get that he's talking about them. And so now Jesus is going to ratchet it up just a little bit. He's going to make it a little clearer what he's talking about. And I want you to see this. Jesus rebuked them. Look at verse 7. So Jesus said to them again, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture." Jesus is saying, you guys are thieves. You have not entered through me because I'm the door. I'm the one that the sheep know their voice. And if you come through me, it means you will speak through me. And my sheep will hear your voice. But instead, what you have done, you have jumped over the fence, and you've come in and you have stolen away and tried to destroy and have destroyed my sheep. Man, that's harsh. They were trying to draw them after themselves, not pointing them to God, were they? Jesus doesn't equate that as, oh, you just did something small. You stole from God. And you destroyed His people. That is not a life thing. I'm the door. You must come through me to be God's shepherd. There is some question whether or not this is talking about sheep or shepherd, but let me lay it out for you, right? It's both. Who are the shepherds? They're sheep of God, aren't they? They're part of the flock of God. You go through Jesus, you enter that pasture, you're His people and you will be saved. But if you're not His people, you can't be one of the shepherds. You can only be shepherding what you want, your flock, after yourselves. You're stealing from God. You guys are thieves. But notice what you're killing and destroying the sheep. But what did the good shepherd come to do? Verse 10. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and they may have it abundantly. You guys are taking their life away, but I didn't come for that purpose. I came to make their life better and to give them life. You are not in that way. Notice this next review. You know what? You guys just don't care about the sheep at all. Pick up verse 12. Verse 11, let's begin with what Jesus says. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them because he's a hired hand and is not concerned about the sheep. Who do the sheep belong to? We talked about that this morning. They belong to Jesus, to God. A hired hand, a shepherd, who has been entrusted with the sheep of God. 1 Peter 5, shepherd the flock of God which is among you. That is a grave responsibility. And if a shepherd doesn't care about the sheep and who the sheep belong to, when bad times come, when dangers come, he goes running. Because does he care about the sheep? He cares about himself. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. He says that over and over and over again. It's all about, I've got to give up myself for them. And I gladly do it. I want to do it. These people, they don't want to give any sacrifice whatsoever. And lastly, you see, they kind of have a limited sight of who they're thinking about. Verse 16. I have other sheep which are not of this fold. And I must bring them also, and they will hear my voice, and they will become one flock with one shepherd. We know this to be talking about bringing in the Gentiles. Those who are not of the Jewish birth, nationality, proselytes. Jews, who did they care about?
Themselves.
They cared about making other people Jews, not necessarily God's people. Although they would say they were the God's people. But their eyes were limited. Think about Peter when it's time, when he is called to go to Cornelius, right? Did he understand what in the world he was supposed to do? He didn't understand until he walked in the door, even after being told. He says, oh, now I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. The sight was limited about who could be a sheep and who could belong to God. The leaders only thought about the people who were in Jerusalem and Israel and those who they could make like them. Because you remember in Matthew 23, they would go land and sea to make one proselyte. But they wouldn't make him any better. They would actually make him worse. They'd make him a son of hell. That's what these leaders were doing in that day. And Jesus says, open your eyes. My flock is for everyone. It's for the Jew first, and also to the Greek. It's all far too limited. It's all been about this bigger picture. Jesus' rebuke of them is, I'm the good shepherd. You are not. And so I thought about this. And so you think, oh man, he's just told them off. He's going to set them straight, right? Well, wouldn't you know the reactions before and the reactions after are basically the same? Keep following with me. Notice how they keep going. Look at chapter 10 now, verse 19. Again, a division arises among the people. So a division occurred again. And notice how many times that word has been used to this point. He used it in verse 7, and he's going to use it again, and it will be said down in verse 31. This is a kind of a repeat of everything that's going on. A division occurred again among the Jews because of these words. And many of them were saying, he is a demon and is insane. Why do you listen to him? And others are saying, these are not the sayings of one demon possessed. A demon cannot open the eyes of the blind, can he? This is a continuation of what has just happened with the man born blind. They're still trying to figure out, who is this guy? Well, time passes maybe a little bit. Winter time. And another group comes to Jesus. There's a division among them. And you know what they're wanting to find out from him? Speak to us plainly and confess if you're the Christ, verse 24. So the Jews gathered around him. They were saying to him, how long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Christ, tell us plainly. We don't want other people to confess it, but we want you to confess it. You tell us. And so that's what we spend the most of our time on this morning, wasn't it? Because he goes on to tell them a little more about the Good Shepherd. I told you, and you do not believe. The works I do in my Father's name, believe them. They just don't care. They don't ask. And when they finally realize that he is God, that I and the Father are one, he says in verse 30, what do they do, verse 31? The Jews picked up stones again to stone him. They don't want any part of it because they're not the good shepherd. He says, you do not listen. You do not believe. My sheep hear my voice and they follow me. You can't be a shepherd of God's sheep if you're not one of the sheep. What a crazy set of rulers. And so there's been question about passages like Ezekiel 34 that clearly have a messianic tone to them. As we pointed out this morning, there will be one shepherd. It may be the shepherds that it's talking about at the beginning of the chapter are these leaders of the day, these shepherds. Very possible. But I think you could also go back and you could look in Israel's history and see that the shepherds did the same thing there as well. Poor leadership doesn't work in the church. What's it mean to be a good leader? How in the world do you do it, right? I'm going to start with something very basic. I got three things. What's my motivation for being a leader? Why do I want to lead the people? You ever thought about that? You ever sat back and you You thought about it? Maybe you didn't think about it, but maybe you're just a power hungry and you're a control freak. Like, I'm kind of a control freak, as some of you might know. But you're power hungry and you want to be the first. You want to be the preeminent. You want everyone to look at you. You want everyone to look at you, and you want it your way all the time. There's a guy like that in the Scriptures. His name was Diotrephes. And you read about Diotrephes in 3 John, verses 9 through 10 especially. You know what he was doing? He was putting brothers out of the church because he wanted to be the preeminent. The Apostle Paul says, I'll deal with him. Or the Apostle John says, I'll deal with him when I get there. That's not okay. If you want to be a leader, to be number one, go ahead and scratch that off your list. Correct it. It ain't going to work. Go to number two. Maybe I'm going to get some kind of benefit from it. Maybe I'll benefit monetarily, or people will look up to me in some kind of way and special. And so when Peter is writing to the shepherds, the elders in 1 Peter chapter 5, he says to make sure that you shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntary, according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness. It's not for any kind of benefit for you. I don't become a leader to get some kind of benefit. That's what the bad shepherds do. They eat their own flock. They take advantage of their own flock to get better themselves. Better, quote. Don't let that be your motivation. Maybe your motivation is, well, somebody's got to run the business. The church is a business, and man, somebody's got to do this. Well, what about verse 3 of the same chapter? Not as lording it over the allotment to your charge, but proving as examples of the flock. And it's actually verse 2 was the verse I wanted. I put verse 3. It's the one, not under compulsion, but voluntary. If you feel like you just have to do it because somebody's got to do it, think about it again. Why do I want to do it? I want to do this. This is a voluntary thing that I want to be a leader. I want to serve the flock of God that is among this place. Or maybe it's just, you feel like, man, it's just something I'm supposed to do. I've been a Christian for such and such a time. I've been around for such and such a time. And as a mature Christian, you know, the Hebrew writer gets on to the Hebrews because by this time they ought to be teachers. And he says, but I got to give you the elementary things again. But then we forget about passages like, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that you will be judged with a stricter judgment. Somebody's got to do it. Maybe. Somebody is going to have to do it. But is that the mentality? I mean, it's just what you're supposed to do. You just go. Being examples. Or maybe you want to lead the people of God because you care for the sheep. You look out and as Jesus did this morning, you look out and you see, man, there are some souls that need touching. There are some lives that are, man, they are getting dangerous and they are flirting on the edge. You say, you know what? I'm gonna look out for their soul. I'm gonna take personal responsibility for them because I care for their soul that much. Well, that's what elders, shepherds are to do. Go with me to Acts chapter 20. I referenced this morning as Paul is speaking to the Ephesian elders. Now, I want us to notice a few things that's said. I want us to pick up in verse 26. He says, therefore I testify to you this day that I am innocent of the blood of all men. For I did not shrink from declaring to you the whole purpose or the whole counsel of God. If we're going to be shepherds, what kind of things should we be feeding the flock with? The teachings of Jesus, wouldn't it? My sheep hear my voice, and they flee from strangers. That's part of it, is that you've got to speak the words of Jesus. He said, I did that. Paul says, I did. And Paul, by the way, wasn't married. So he could not have met the qualifications of 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1. But yet you would still call him a leader. He was an apostle. He was a leader of these people. He said, verse 28, to the elders, be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock. Part of leadership is I got to look at myself first. I care for my soul and I care for other souls. Care for yourselves. And notice why he says that. Verse, keep going on. Because I know, verse 29, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Wolves are coming, and you as shepherds, you've got to be looking out for them. And from you, verse 30, from your own selves, men will arise. From the shepherds of Ephesus, they would become wolves, trying to draw people after themselves. Speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after them. Therefore, be on the alert, remembering that night and day, for a period of 3 years, I did not cease to admonish each one of you with tears. This is one of the prettiest pictures to me of shepherds, of leading. Watch yourself. Watch for others. And it is going to take a ton of hard work. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen of, oh, I've decided to do this, and so everything's going to be fixed. For a period of 3 years, night and day, I was spent with you. Paul had invested himself in these Ephesians. He says, shepherds, you invest yourselves in them. Secondly, I got to make sure I'm doing it for the right reasons. Secondly, I want to see, we have to go through Jesus. If we want to be recognized as elders of the church at East Orange, right? We can't just say, you know what, so-and-so is doing a lot of work, and so-and-so is doing a lot of work, let's make them elders. It doesn't work that way, does it? Or let's make them pastors. It doesn't work that way, does it? Because you have passages like 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus chapter 1 and 1 Peter chapter 5 where there are qualifications for a shepherd, for an elder. By the way, those are interchangeable terms. Michael talked about that not too long ago, so I didn't hit that point again. But that doesn't mean that we can't be leaders, does it? How do you lead? You say one day, you get up one day and you say, hey, well, I'm going to be a leader of this place. And so, you start leading. Maybe in one sense you say, you know what, I'm going to take on some leadership. I'm going to go. You know what you start doing? You start doing. You're showing an example. And that's what is said in 1 Peter chapter 5. And I want us to see that. This is really what you're talking about. One of the writers that I read said, a shepherd has been there, he's ahead, and he's trying to get you to where he's at. It's not he's trying to boss you around, but he's trying to get you where he is at. He's ahead of you, in a sense. So verse 3. Nor is lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. That's truly what leadership is, isn't it? It's being examples to those who are around you. It is being, as Jesus says, the servant. He who wants to be the greatest must be the servant. If I want to lead people, I have to think about how people view me. That's not the motivation. But notice it is a qualification in the elders. Go to 1 Timothy chapter 3 and see this qualification. That you think, oh, they're going to be an elder of the church here in East Orange, right? So we need to think highly of them. We need to look up to them. All of those things. But it goes farther than that. If you're reading the qualifications in verse 7 of 1 Timothy chapter 3, he says, and he must have a good reputation with those outside the church, so that he will not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Can you lead folks? folks, if they aren't willing to be led by you, no way. And if people aren't looking at you with respect, they aren't seeing you as an example of what they want to be or what they need to be, you can try all day long, but they will not follow. We got to think about how we look. And then finally, if I'm going to be a shepherd, as God would want me to be, a leader, as God would want me to be, I got to be like Jesus. It's not about me. I got to give up myself for the sheep. So maybe I care about souls, right? And I'm sitting in my pew, and I look, and a brother or sister that needs some encouragement is sitting over there. You know what I do? What I should do instead of talking to my friend that's sitting right next to me, or my family that's sitting right next to me, or the person that's in the row right in front of me? Make a beeline. Because you care for their soul. I can go talk to you later. I can call you. I can come see you later if you got to scoot out the door. Souls are important. Sometimes we don't get the opportunity. Sometimes they sneak in. And we got a situation, don't we? Someone comes in, right? And you really need to talk to them. It's maybe the only opportunity you get. If you're like me, you blow that opportunity. Because you don't know what to say. I thought enough about it in advance. That's what we're talking about. Is, man, I got to get out of my comfort zone to try to help people for their soul's sake. And as we pointed out, man, it's going to take hours of hard work. If you want someone whose soul is not exactly where it ought to be at this moment, and you're trying to get them to where it ought to be, man, that's going to take some work. That's going to take some tears, probably. It's going to take some bumps and some bruises and some scrapes all along the way. I got to be willing to put in the time if I want them to be where I think they need to be. And we also have to realize that each sheep is a little different, isn't it? I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, Jesus says. Are you the same as me? No. Are you the same as the person sitting next to you? No. So why would we try to have a blanket approach to reach people? It doesn't work that way. The way you come to Jesus is different than the way I came. You might be scared if someone comes down that hellfire and brimstone to you. Whoa. Maybe you're a person that doesn't respond well to hellfire and brimstone. You need some gentle bringing along. You need some patience. Man, you got to deal with sheep differently. And you see that in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 13 or verse 14 of, we urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, and be patient with everyone. There are different steps of where people are at in their life, and you got to deal accordingly. So that gets me to combo point. How can you deal appropriately with the sheep if you don't know the sheep? That's one of the best ways of becoming a leader, is just getting to know the people. Of whether you got them into your house, or you go out to dinner, or you go to Six Flags and you find out something about them that you didn't know before, or you go to a cookout, or you just spend some time with them getting to know something about them. Man, that goes a long way. And being able to know how to approach someone who needs that help. And I can't lead people that I don't know. Because I won't follow anyone I don't know. And if I'm expecting and I'm wanting to lead some folks, I got to get to know some folks. I know my sheep and they know me. And the last point, man, I got to feed the sheep. It's not my opinion when I go to talk to them. What's Jesus say? This is not what I think you should do. This is what Jesus says you should do. And as we pointed out this morning, if we are the sheep of God, we will hear His voice and we will follow Him. Man, it's a scary thing. Michael and myself are kind of in leadership roles because we stand up here and we preach, right? I don't fit the qualifications of 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, and 1 Peter 5. But I'm still trying to lead you guys. And if I don't know you, and if I'm not sacrificing for you, and if you don't look up to me, I can't lead you anywhere. And that's not necessarily your fault. That's me. Because I've got to take it on myself. And you've got to take it on yourself. So when you want to get somebody somewhere, you get down, you get dirty, and you get down with them. There's a book that I love the title of that is about elder, being elder. And it's called They Smell Like Sheep. It's because you can't be a leader of the people and not be with them. Jesus, He came down to be with us, didn't He? He is the Lamb of God who was sacrificed to take away our sins. We too are sheep that belong to God. Let us go through the door of Jesus and be the kind of leaders and the kind of sheep that God would have us to be. If you're subject to the invitation anyway tonight, we'd ask that you come now as we stand and as we sing. Thank you.